We shall be speaking with Robert Gogan, who is here with me in the studio. Robert has remastered Ulysses and does a one-man show. You're very welcome to Near FM, Robert.
Thank you, Connie.
You can stroll with us now through Ulysses for the afternoon, to quote the name of your show. If we talk a bit about Joyce himself and Ulysses as a book, and acknowledge how difficult it has been for all of us, and then we'll talk about the wonderful work you've done to bring it to us all, that we'll understand the humour of it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, I have to ask this question. Ulysses, in its original form, Robert, was it a great book for the few?
Well, it's turned into that. And I suppose, yes, the concept for most people is that this is a book that's too difficult to read, that has been written by undoubtedly a genius, and it is for the chosen few. And there could be many different reasons why the book has ended up with that sort of a description surrounding it. And my hope between the Ulysses Remastered that I published a few years ago and my show Strolling Through Ulysses, that I can actually bring the book and the whole concept of it to the proverbial ordinary people, which of course is the vast majority of us in this world, and show the fun that Joyce actually put into the book and what he intended to the readers to get out of it.
Well, you know, in other words, then, you have broken down the barriers of incomprehension, have you?
Well, I'd like to think I'm trying to do that.
Of this legendary work, and you brought it to the general public, which I think a lot of people would agree with your work. But I have to ask you, a book so big, 783 pages, 260,000 words, that according to Joyce took 20,000 hours to write. Now, why would you attempt to do something like that and remaster it, Robert?
Oh, because I probably have lost my sense of reason before anything else. But well, I mean, I was always really interested in English literature and music, right? And English literature, particularly back even when I was going to school. I had read several of the Shakespearean plays that weren't on the course, and I'd learned poems off by heart because I just loved the way the English language was constructed and how some of these really, really good writers were able to, with two or three words, get such beautiful little concepts across and descriptions across to the reader. And I had read Ulysses at around 17 years of age, and I probably understood about a third of it. But I really enjoyed it, and I have read it and read it so many times since then. But I always just have this frustration speaking to friends of mine and family and relations, because you always like to talk about something that you're interested in. So you could be at a dinner table, or you could be in a pub or something, and people are talking about the stuff they like. And I'd say, yeah, well, Ulysses, and just everyone blanks over.
And do you think that's because of the style of writing and the narrative, well, no punctuation? Is that the problem?
The punctuation aspect only hit me only a couple of years ago, really. But it is, I mean, like, Joyce's writing would take a certain effort to, what do you say, to understand, and not to understand as much as to grasp, just as much as Shakespeare would, or Yeats's poetry, or the poem of Seamus Heaney. You know, you just don't take it up, have a quick look and run on as if it's a sort of a very simple book you buy out in the shops, like a thriller or a love story. There's a bit of artwork in it. But one of the greatest problems I feel with Ulysses is because of the way it's constructed by Joyce, it needed more consideration as to how the punctuation was done. And in fairness, Joyce had really very little interest in punctuation. He wanted the minimum of punctuation in his works. But he also wanted the general public to read his books, particularly Ulysses. And he was always extremely disappointed when the Irish people in general just didn't read it and hadn't read it. And perhaps, you know, as time went on, if somebody could have actually sat James Joyce down and said, look, James, you know, if you actually restructure what the words look like on the pages, I think you'll get more people to read it. And he may have done that.
He may. Now, do you think it was autobiographical? Is it Joyce young, Joyce middle-aged, or did he work on the material he always said that was around him about observing human nature, the simplest things like opening an umbrella and folding a newspaper?
Thinking of where you're going to have your lunch.
Yes, that kind of
and
thing.
And also a lot of other stuff that people did object to in the book.
In the book, yes.
But, well, it's... No, Ulysses certainly isn't. I mean, the book he wrote prior to that, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, was autobiographical of Joyce's life up to the time that he went to Paris. And the character Stephen Dedalus, who is the principal character, of course, in A Portrait of the Artist, because it was all he is a depiction of Joyce himself right throughout his life. And Dedalus appears again in Ulysses when he's around 22 years of age. So Dedalus is Stephen Dedalus is basically James Joyce, but Ulysses itself wouldn't be autobiographical, but there would be various aspects that would refer back to things that had happened in either Joyce's life or his father's life or something like that. So there'd be bits. Joyce picked information up from everywhere. He was renowned that wherever he went, he always had a notebook with him. And if somebody said something interesting or a good joke or a good turn of phrase, out came the notebook and it was written down. And an awful lot of it was reappeared in Ulysses.
Homer. Where would you put Homer in comparison? Would you go there?
Well, I'd probably be shot for saying this.
That's why I asked you.
Well, I think it has a certain interest that he mirrored the story on Homer's The Odyssey to a certain extent in certain areas. But I think it's quite a tenuous, it's not a strong link. And in other words, what I'm trying to say more than anything else is you do not have to read The Odyssey by Homer in order to understand Ulysses. And so many people have approached me after my show and have said, God, I'd love to read Ulysses, but God, I suppose I better read Homer's Odyssey first. And say, no, I'd read Ulysses dozens of times before I even had a look at the Odyssey. And if you never read The Odyssey, it would make no
difference. Well, that's very interesting. Now, he was a very complex man. Now, do you think that his attitude in his writings to the church was because of his own education, or was it just a natural progression of thinking?
Yeah, I think Joyce, more so than possibly his father and his brother Stanislaus, Joyce had a kind of a love-hate relationship with the church. He was educated in Clongowes and Belvedere College by the Jesuits, and he had an immense regard for them. And I suppose in the back of his mind he realised that he probably would never have got to the level of education that he had he not been with the Jesuits. But he had a very cynical attitude towards the Catholic Church. And in fact, his main character in Ulysses, Leopold Bloom, has the same. Leopold Bloom would possibly, although he had a Jewish background, he would be considered an atheist at this stage. And he's very, very cynical about how the church manipulates its flock. So Joyce, certainly that would have been reflecting a lot in how Joyce would have felt at the time as well. But he wouldn't have had the sort of hatred that, and hatred I think is the word to use, that his brother had for the church.
And was it Gibson who said that at heart he was always a believer, really? That it was kind of, he was an intellectual Catholic, if there's such a thing. Would you agree
yes,
with that?
I think there's every possibility that that's probably the way he was, although he probably, in writing that, would never really admit it. But yeah, I think there's a good chance that could be very much the case with him.
And as I said, he was a man of many parts. Music played a big part in his own life.
Massively, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I suppose music played a part in so many people's lives around the turn of the 20th century, because there were no radios and there was no TV and there was certainly no cinema or anything. So the only way people could really entertain themselves was storytelling and music. But it happened that Joyce's father, John Stanislaus Joyce, had a magnificent tenor voice, and Joyce got that from his father. And he could have been a professional singer. And in fact, Count John McCormack was encouraging him to go down that path and was encouraging him in every single way. But Joyce, at that stage of his life in 1903 and 1904, was he kind of was wandering around, not interested in too many things, and was really just interested in writing. But he entered for the Fesh Ceoil in around 1903 or 1904, I'm not too sure which. And the examiners said afterwards that he would have got the gold medal, which would have been a very high thing to get, but that he couldn't sight read music.
Oh.
He hadn't bothered to learn it. He couldn't be bothered, really. And so he got the bronze medal at the end, which anecdotally he threw into the River Liffey on his way home, disgusted after the Fesh Cole. But I mean, to actually be in a position as a male singer to win the Fesh Cole had you right up there at the very top of what was going on. So he could very well have been. And music permeates particularly Ulysses in every single form and all different aspects of different types of music.
He does bring it in, yeah, his love of music, doesn't he, somewhere in some of his works now?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he does.
Of course, there's the famous photograph of Joyce playing the guitar. He had a guitar of his own. And he would sing at the drop of a hat for people. And this came in. Stephen Dedalus is reputed in Ulysses to have a magnificent voice. And Leopold Bloom, in fact, towards the end of the evening when they'd met, was thinking of various ways that he could promote him to be a professional singer. And but the widespread different types of music that Joyce loved was also interesting. It was everything from the Victorian parlour songs to
Love's Old Sweet Song.
Love's Old Sweet Song, Marble Halls.
Yes.
And then the Croppy Boy and a lot of the Irish ballads of the day and a lot of the Victorian music hall songs, those seaside girls, like everything.
Broad taste.
Seemed to like all music.
Do you think, Robert, that he depicted Dublin at the time as it really was? The squalor, the monotony of it. I know he considered it paralysed, didn't he, in comparison to other European cities?
Yeah.
Did he get it right at the period?
I think he did, yeah.
Do you?
For various different reasons. I mean, the paralysis of Dublin comes in so clearly in his book of short stories, Dubliners. It's sort of a depressing grey book, and most of the weather in the book is greyish and it's raining and all this sort of thing. And the paralysis comes across, I think, very strongly through people's almost imprisonment with religion, more so than anything else, and the way it constrained them from being able to think for themselves apart from everything else, and naturally what they could do. And this extended then into Ulysses, where the Irish people that Joyce dealt with were more imprisoned with the concept of drinking and pub life more so than religion, although religion comes into it and racism comes into it very, very strongly in the book, because Leopold Bloom is probably a lapsed Jew, but most of the people around him, who one presumes most were Catholic, I presume, still regarded him as a Jew. And all the racism and the comments that are made in relation to that come out very strongly in the book. So they are constrained and paralysed still, even if it's not with the Catholic Church, it's with drink.
I see. And as you said, do you think he's right? He said that if Dublin was knocked down in the morning, it could be rebuilt by using his book. Is that true? Sort of.
Again, I'm going to have to go against tradition here with this one.
Yeah.
And I actually wouldn't. I wouldn't agree with that. Because in fact, funny enough, although the book is so long and so descriptive about people and their thoughts and their actions during the day, he doesn't describe actual places very much. Bloom's house, Davy Byrne's pub, the Ormond Hotel. There is very little description of the actual places where all of the action of the book of the day takes place. But what I would say is that if every Dubliner was destroyed, or particularly because it was mainly with men, if every Dublin man was destroyed somewhere, you could rebuild a good Dubliner out of Ulysses. But the city itself, no, I wouldn't think so. But then again,
that's very interesting.
I'm glad
I asked you that. Yeah. Now, I have to ask you this. Women. Why do you think very few women appeared or even spoke in Ulysses? So the thinking on women was really from a male perspective, was it?
Well, yeah. Well, you see, most women kind of stayed at home in those days. Most of them didn't work. Again, quite a piece of the book is about the funeral of Paddy Dignam. And, of course, women didn't go to the funerals then. Even Paddy Dignam's wife, I think, didn't go to the funeral. Women didn't go to the funerals, only men did. So as Leopold Bloom is out all day and he's in several pubs and a hotel and he's mixing with people, he goes to the Evening Telegraph offices to discuss some advertising he wants. There would have been no women around, or very, very few. Blazes Boylan's secretary comes into it for a brief while. There's a girl in the fruit shop that Blazes Boylan goes into when he orders some fruit to bring up to Molly. Mrs. Josie Breen comes into it because Bloom bumps into her on the street. But of course, at the end of the day, Molly Bloom is throughout the book, all day long in Bloom's thoughts. So a particular woman is featured very strongly. And of course, he ends the book with Molly, which was a very significant aspect of Joyce's thoughts on women, as said. But they just wouldn't have been around.
That explains that, Sir Joe. Would you agree now, Time magazine in 1999, they compiled, with great care, we are told, the people, the most influential people in the 20th century who impacted the world, for good or bad. Now, we're talking about Einstein and people like that. And he was named there, Roosevelt. Do you think he deserved that honour, that place?
Yes, from a writing point of view, and from people who based their styles on Joyce's writing, he really did turn the idea of the average piece of English writing on its head back in 1922 when Ulysses was first published. It's probably the beginnings of what was known as the modernism or the modern movement for English literature. And he was extremely influential on hundreds, if not thousands, of well-known published writers from 1922 onwards.
Flann O'Brien.
So he definitely would have. Oh yeah, that means so many. But he definitely would have influenced. So from that point of view, he has earned his place as being somebody who has been incredibly influential on aspects of life since 1922. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Good. Did you ever see his grave in Switzerland?
No, I actually never got to it yet.
Well, you will. You will, Robert.
I absolutely will. It's one of the journeys I intend to make, actually, in the next 12 months.
Good.
I want to go for that.
Oh, we'll have to hear about that. Yeah. Now, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to me, Connie O'Reilly, here on Near FM, Music and Musings. And it's 6711190 if you wish to call in, or you can text us on 087-6944-500. Now, I'm speaking with Robert Gogan, the man who can take us strolling through Ulysses. So, Robert, you tell us. You tell us where you're taking us with your strolling.
Well, basically what I did with Ulysses, because I got so frustrated with people all the time telling me they could never read it and all this sort of thing, that I decided, wouldn't it be great if you could actually tell the entire story of Ulysses in a reasonable period of time? And I started writing Strolling Through Ulysses. In fact, I wrote something a little bit more complex before that called The Bloomsday Story, which I realised was a bit too complex. So I said, if I could do this as a one-man show. And I wrote it, of course, it was about 2.5 hours long, which is far too long. So I began to whittle it down to the points where you could leave out but still get the entire story in. And so I whittled it down to about 75 minutes where I tell the story from the end of the book, illustrated with bits and pieces of readings from Ulysses to show that some of the complex nature of Joyce's writing, and particularly with the emphasis on the fun of the book, because Ulysses is a very, very funny book. And most of the characters in Ulysses are straight out of the heart of Dublin. And so many of them you will see and hear around the streets of Dublin, and particularly in the pubs of Dublin to this very day. And it was so funny, and I wanted to get that across to people so that they might come along and say, well, I'll give Ulysses a go now. You know, and I hope I've managed to do that for at least a few people.
Oh, you have, because you have a very successful one-man show. And so tell us where you bring that to. Where do you reach people with your show, and where do you perform?
Well, at the moment, I perform anywhere.
Right. Real troubadour.
I have a residency, as they say in the entertainment business, in that wonderful Victorian pub, the Stag's Head in Dame Court, just off Dame Street. And I do that every Sunday at 1:30 and 5:30 in their lovely little theatre space downstairs. And I've done that from March. I could probably go on until November. And there's a great atmosphere there, so I perform it there twice every Sunday. And I also have performed it in a plethora of libraries over the last few months.
I love the country.
Oh yes,
yes,
oh,
not just Dublin. Yes,
and it's amazing. You mightn't think there'd be that much of an interest in Ulysses kind of outside of Dublin so much, or outside of the Leinster area. And I'm surprised. I mean, place Wexford, Castlebar, all sorts of places that they came out in their droves and really, really interested and got a good laugh and got everything that I was telling, and the Dublinese part of the whole thing. But I also do it, and I've had great fun doing it, for book clubs and private clubs.
Lovely.
And that
rugby club, I heard.
I've done it. I've done it in a rugby club. I've done it in a tennis club. And I've done it in several people's private houses.
Wow.
For special occasions that they want things done. And it's great in those particular places because very often the host or hostess has plied the guests with a little bit of wine before they arrive. And Ulysses is one of these books, and particularly my show, because it's a funny, it's a comedy, really, with a little tipple of wine inside you. It just makes it that easy, much easier for people to slip into the entire atmosphere of it.
Well, we don't have wine for you, Robert, I'm sorry, okay. But give us a demo.
I have a lovely glass of water.
Give us a demo.
A tiny piece of...
Do something.
Which kind of tells just the manner in which the thing works, and gives you a bit of an idea of what comes up in the show anyway. So here we go. With his meal finished, Mr. Bloom leaves the Ormond Hotel and strolls along the quays. He walks up Capel Street and turns left into Little Britain Street. It's now around 5 o'clock, and at the funeral this morning, Mr. Bloom had arranged to meet up with Martin Cunningham around this time. And so the scene changes to Barney Kiernan's pub. And not only does the scene change, but Joyce's style of writing also changes, because in this episode, and in a few more to follow, Joyce... Well, he sort of takes a back seat, so to speak, and he allows other characters to take up and continue the story. So here in Barney Kiernan's pub, Joyce leaves us in the hands of a nasty, grumpy Dublin begrudger who hasn't got a good word to say about anybody. And Joyce doesn't even give him a name, but he does give him the task of telling us all about the goings-on in Barney Kiernan's pub. Now, Mr. Bloom hasn't arrived at the pub yet, but there's a group of local characters in the bar having a chat and drinking pints. And among them, sitting on a bar stool, is a certain particular character.
And there, sure enough, was the citizen. He was up on the corner having a great confab with himself and that bloody mangy mongrel Gary Owen. And he waiting for what the sky would drop in the way of drink.
Oh, yes. As our narrator tells us, it's the citizen, all right. A narrow-minded, dogmatic, bigoted public house windbag who, when he's not composing himself about the Irish cause, spends his time scrounging pints from whoever buy him one. Well, they're all swilling pints and talking about the affairs of the day, and little Alf Bergen can't believe it when he hears from Joe Hines that Paddy Dignam is dead.
Paddy Dignam dead? Sure, I'm after seeing him not 5 minutes ago, as plain as a pikestaff.
You saw his ghost then. God between us and harm.
Ah, good Christ, only 5 and Willie Murray with them. The two of them near, whatchacallums. Dead? He's no more dead than you are.
Maybe so.
They took the liberty of burying him this morning, anyhow.
That's just a little...
Well, now, I have to tell you, listeners, that was all up the top of Robert's head. No, it's nothing. But I've seen him in the Axis perform. How long is your show?
It's about 75 minutes long.
70. No breaks?
Depending on the circumstances, we take a 10 or 15 minute break if it suits the audience and suits the place we're in.
The venue.
But we can go straight through with it sometimes as well. It depends.
And I have to tell you, Robert does it all off the top of his head. And we were all so impressed when we saw it. So that's how I knew you would like to hear him today speak about it. Now, how many people could you work into that one man? Does it leave space for another actor or...
Well, you could have...
You could...
Well, you could do it as a full play and you could probably have... I mean, I think...
Many would you have?
Probably about 30 characters.
Wow. Or
whatever. There'd be possibly 25 to 30 characters. Well, you'd have a narrator. And if I worked it out, there's probably about 30. Some of them might only have one or two lines.
Yes.
But... and you have a reader, you have a narrator, you have all sorts of people involved. Yeah, you could actually have great fun doing it with a bunch of people.
Right. And... I'm wondering, what do the purists think of this version? The Joycean scholars.
I don't know, because I have had many Joycean scholars at the show, particularly tourists and foreigners, because I go down off the stage most of the time straight afterwards, and I chat to the people, and so many of them have either if they're from Ireland or particularly Dublin, they'll have anecdotes about Joyce, that their father used to know Joyce, or one of them, a person came up to you a couple of weeks ago, that his uncle stayed in one of the flats with Oliver St. John Gogarty, who of course is Buck Mulligan in the book. So people have all sorts of stories to tell about it. But no, I've had quite a few very serious Joyceans come up to me after the show, and they seem to love it.
Good.
Because it's showing...
It's still Joyce. It's just more manageable Joyce.
An aspect...
Yes.
...that people aren't aware of. I mean, the great story with Joyce is that his wife, Nora Barnacle, used to complain that Joyce used to keep her awake at night guffawing out loud when he was writing Ulysses, because he was having such good fun writing it. And that's the whole atmosphere of the book, and that's what I hopefully get across with my show.
And do you think the characters are based on real people?
Yeah.
A doctor is one.
The vast majority of them are,
yeah.
There's some of them are absolutely obvious. As I said there a moment ago, Buck Mulligan is Oliver St. John Gogarty. Some of them, like Alf Bergen, who came into the little piece there from Barney Kiernan's Pub, he was a friend of Joyce's father, and he was Alf Bergen himself. Simon Dedalus, of course, is Joyce's father, because Stephen Dedalus himself is James Joyce at age 22. But the two main characters, of course, of the book, which would be Molly Bloom and Leopold Bloom, are not based on any single individual. So, and there are all sorts of theories and commentaries about who each of them is based on. Certainly, Nora Barnacle would form a great part of Molly Bloom, there's no doubt about it. But Leopold Bloom, who is the main character and where we get Bloomsday from, I mean, he is a hodgepodge of several different characters that Joyce would have known both in Ireland and abroad. And so that's interesting. The main character isn't, you can't put him into a box anywhere, but so many of the other characters would have been so well known as individuals.
And do you feel now that there is a great love for Joyce in this country? Do you feel now that maybe if it's presented to schools in your format, something like that, it would give a much easier appreciation to?
Yeah, it would. Certainly for those who are curious, like I was at 17, and really interested in the English language, it would encourage them to have a go at reading the book. It would be great to see just small piece of Ulysses on the English curriculum. And I think it could be done quite easily. There's one or two pieces in the book. I think when, in the fourth episode, as it's called, when Leopold Bloom is introduced to the reader first, that would be a great episode to have. It stands on its own, and you get every aspect of Joyce's style of writing in it. And it'd be a great one to put on the English course, and also would really encourage so many students to have a go at the whole book, particularly probably when they're finished their examinations and that. And it would bring it to the general public, which is what Joyce, of course, always wanted.
Well, we shall be working here in Near FM with Robert, hopefully, this summer, on some kind of format that will bring his kind of remastered Ulysses to all of us. And I know we can certainly pursue it with the schools and around. The schools are very, very receptive to coming in here to Near FM. So, Robert, finally, says you. Who do you like best? What characters do you like playing? If you had a choice now, what would you like to play? Or not?
Well, you always get great fun doing the narrator in the Barney Kiernan scene, because he is your typical Dublin begrudger. And I suppose one of the things about that is we all know a few of them. They still exist today, and they don't have a good word to say about anybody. And no matter who you bring up in conversation, they have a cynical word to say about it. He certainly would be one of the characters that I would enjoy most of all. Leopold Bloom himself is an amazing character, and it's only when you get a chance to study him that you kind of realise, or at least in my opinion, that he's possibly the bravest character in the book. He's a very courageous man, and he's belittled by everyone around him. He's slagged to a great extent because of his Jewish background, and he will not play the game that all of the people he knows in the book do. In other words, spend their last shilling on drink. He won't do that, and he gets slagged. They don't like him for that, and they kind of separate him from them from that, and of course his Jewish background. He's a wonderful character to play, because when you see him first, before you give it a lot of thought, you kind of feel that Bloom is kind of a weak, he'd be one of the weak characters in the book. But in fact, he's not. He's the strongest. And when you think about it for a while, I think Molly's soliloquy at the end brings this out as well, that he is a courageous man.
And you're just like the one you would not like to play.
Well, I find Stephen Dedalus probably extremely boring.
Right.
That's probably because I'm not on the same educational level as he is. He's a real classical educated individual, as indeed Joyce was. But one of the things that causes an awful lot of the problems with Ulysses, because most people, if you speak to them, say what they say is, I dropped it after 30 pages. And the reason is that Stephen Dedalus is the main character of the first three episodes. The reason for that is because Joyce, again, mirroring Homer's Odyssey, Ulysses doesn't come into Homer's Odyssey until book five, so Bloom doesn't come into episode four, so you're dealing with Stephen Dedalus, whom nobody understands. And they probably didn't understand Joyce when he was around 22 either. So he's a broody, aloof young character. Man mm-hmm. who thinks and makes up scenarios and goes into different languages when he talks and talks in absolute riddles that nobody understands. And so he'd be the guy that I wouldn't want to play.
Volunteer to play. No. Can we have something else from your...
If not really. There isn't another piece I could do without having to make a huge explanation beforehand.
Or yeah.
After. There isn't.
Well, we've got
the piece out of Barney Kiernan.
And you're happy with that.
It sort of stands on its own. And there are, I'm afraid, parts in it which, as my advertising goes, that it's kind of an over-16s type show. Because Joyce does go into a great detail in areas in relation to the bodily functions of your average human being.
Yes.
It's even to this day, this isn't really done. But Joyce wanted to portray the entire encompassing of a man, which was Leopold Bloom, a man's day in everything he did and thought. So when he'd go to the toilet at the very beginning, this was one of the huge parts of the book that people didn't take very kindly to when it was brought out first, as if this sort of thing shouldn't be in literature. But Joyce's idea was that this sort of stuff is what people do and it should be brought in. So you know, even the small piece that he has about Joyce going to the loo, and I can, this is it's quite...
Well, you did it very well. And
basically,
do you know what, Robert, it surprised me that you worked with so few props that night. I saw you. You've very few props with you on the stage.
It's the characters that bring out.
But it takes so little, doesn't it, to put you in character. The props you had brought you into character.
Just putting on a hat or taking it off or doing something else.
Like yes.
Suddenly puts me right in
yes.
the head of the people.
Into the character.
If you have too many props, you'd be spending too long chopping and changing.
Yes. Well, this was just fascinating, I have to tell you, really, Robert. It was wonderful to hear all that. And so you are in Stag's Head every Sunday.
From now to November, 1:30 and 5:30. Of course, all the information is on the usual www.throughulysses.com.
Right.
And all that there, because there are other shows that I'm doing in between that as well, in other places in Dublin and in various other places as well. But the Stag's Head is a great spot, and it's a fantastic Victorian pub. The atmosphere is fantastic in it. And I have no doubt in the world, because it would have been a well-known pub back around the beginning of the 20th century, that James Joyce crossed the threshold of that pub, I would say, on many occasion in his life in Dublin. And so it's nice to know his spirit is around the place.
Well, Robert, thank you very, very much for coming in to us.
No,
that was Robert Gogan, and we really enjoyed it. It was wonderful.
Thank you very much.
And our door is always open to come in and tell us what you're doing, Robert, because you're a man of many parts. Are you going to, I have to ask you, are you going to attack Finnegan's Wake or anything like that next?
No, Finnegan's Wake is a different kettle of fish.
Would you attempt it?
Well, not to do anything with it as such. It's
simplified.
Book, and I've read bits and pieces from it. I haven't had the patience to read that thing.
Difficult.
It's difficult with the biggest capital D you could ever find.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would suggest to any of the listeners of that is that if they have a curiosity with Finnegan's Wake, just go into a bookshop and pick it up first and have a browse through some of the pages, and they will then realise themselves what they're getting themselves into. It's a huge challenge, and I doff my hat to anybody who reads it fully from cover to cover.
How did you train your mind? How did you train your mind to just absorb all this? Because, you know, you're not an actor, as in career actor, yeah, all your life. How do you train your mind to absorb all this? And it's just natural talent, yeah, well, and ability.
Yeah, well, come on, thank you very much. Well, it's not so much that as if it's a, if you like telling a story,
yes,
about something,
storytelling,
a great film, mm, or a play, or you've had a great night out. Well, when you meet people the next time, you really want to tell them all about, mm, it, and you'll remember everything about the day and who said what and who said didn't, and somebody came in and blah blah blah, and then we went there and then we went somewhere else. And when you get into the habit of doing that, It's so easy to kind of remember. And then, you know, I know when to go over to the book and read the bit out of it, and then when to go into character, and then when just to be the narrator. Just, I suppose it came natural to me in the end. I don't know how it did.
Well, it certainly looks like that. Now, Joyce, was he a genius?
Oh, absolutely.
Was he?
He was, without doubt. And I mean, I adore so much of Shakespeare and Yeats and Keats. I love all of their stuff, and so many other novelists. But Joyce was just out there, that 10% more so. And I think Finnegan's Wake is actually a great illustration of that, because Joyce had done everything he could with the English language by the time he finished Ulysses. He had utterly mastered it, if it's ever possible to master any particular subject in life. And he actually had to invent his own language, basically, to write his next book.
So he was
English as a base and various other languages. So without doubt, yes, an absolute genius.
Well, we'll accept that, Robert. Thank you very much.